There's been a lot of music happening in the New York City apartment of pianist Orly Shaham during this pandemic. Her twin sons are musicians, and she has a conductor husband, David Robertson, who's picked up his guitar again. You'll hear about all of that and how exciting it was and challenging to make her first solo recording. It's the first recording in a series of five celebrating the piano sonatas of Mozart. That's what you're hearing about this week on New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Almacher. First of all, Orly, how are you? How are you during this pandemic and as you're learning kind of a new world order and what you're doing with respect to your career and maybe your family? How are you all doing living in maybe confined quarters?
Well, there's a lot of music coming from our house, I must say. So I think the neighbors either really love us by now or they really hate us. from our apartment. But we're doing okay. You know, the nice thing about being a pianist is that it prepares you for life as a hermit. That's sort of how we live anyway. So it's been interesting because I've been teaching a lot on Zoom and talking with lots of other pianists that way. And in a certain sense, it's almost like we're even more connected to each other now than we would be in the real world because we feel the sense of isolation from other things. So, you know, there have been ups, there have been downs, and we've just all been very grateful to have music through this time.
Tell me about the music making that's been happening in your apartment. Are you in New York City?
I'm in New York City, yeah, and I've certainly been playing my share, and I have two teenage boys who play instruments, so they've been playing their share, and my husband, the conductor David Robertson, who normally doesn't make noise on his instrument, has been playing a lot more guitar lately, so we get to hear that. It's been a kind of an added bonus.
Now, are your sons twins? Do I remember that correctly?
They are twins, yes. Very, very different people. one plays the piano, and the other one plays the violin and also some guitar. And he would want me to make sure that you all knew that I'm also forcing him to learn a little bit of piano, but that's entirely against his wishes.
And what are their ages now?
They are 13 going on at least 40. And one of the funniest things for me about this pandemic, it will be a way to always remember this time. When we went into isolation in March, I had two boys here. And I am now the shortest member of my household. And I have by far the highest voice, neither of which was the case in March.
Wow. And they are at that perfect age to defy everything you want them to do, too. So
they're pretty great. They try to drive us crazy, but they don't.
Over the past year, Orly, you have recorded all 18 of Mozart's piano sonatas. Why did you decide to record these right now?
You know, these are pieces that I have lived with and loved my whole life. For my entire upbringing, my piano teacher always had me working on a Mozart sonata as well as whatever else I was working on. And I have just always gravitated towards Mozart as a composer and as a person. When I was in college, I took some classes actually at Columbia where I was studying music history and other history. Took some classes about Mozart and the Enlightenment and that time period. And I felt very connected somehow to that world, that moment of personal freedom just beginning to open up and Mozart's role in that, as well as his music. So his music has been part of what I've been doing forever. And obviously, as a pianist, I'm so lucky. We have about 4.5 zillion piano concerti that Mozart wrote. And I've performed a good deal of them over these years. So we have all that. And I was thinking about these sonatas a couple of years ago, and I realized, you know, if I've always thought about them individually, one sonata at a time, and how great is that one? How great is this one? How great is that one? And suddenly I looked at the 18 of them as a whole, and I realized that they run pretty much through Mozart's entire compositional life, and they tell an incredible story of who he was as a composer, how he thought of himself as a pianist. Unlike the very public concerti, he wrote many of these for himself to play for his students in little groups or for himself as teaching pieces to give to his students so that he could work with them on their pianistic skills and even on their compositional skills. So they're kind of like experimental testing grounds for ideas, which would be much less public than the symphony or the opera or the concerto. And in that sense, as if you look at them as a whole, they're an incredible monument to just his personal journey and personal growth in his own composition.
Is this your first solo recording of Mozart's music?
It is, actually. Yeah, I've recorded piano violin sonatas with my brother Gil, and I've recorded some concerti with the St. Louis Symphony and with my husband, David Robertson. But it's the first time I've recorded his solo pieces. And there's a wonderful feeling of freedom in recording solo piano. You know, it's so very personal. The responsibility is all on you, but I find that very freeing and really just liberating for my thoughts. And because of the nature of these sonatas, you know, they are very much open to improvisation, particularly on the repeats. Not only would Mozart have hoped, you know, for improvisation, he really specifically calls for it. And the style at the time would have called for it. So that kind of just very openly experimenting way of approaching music worked out in every way for me in terms of these sonatas. It felt like it permeated everything.
This recording that you've just recently released is the first in a 5-volume series. How did you decide what was going to be featured on this very first recording?
Yeah, that's a tough one. And I, you know, we're still playing around with the orders of the future ones. I could find arguments for about 20 different solutions to this little jigsaw puzzle. But I did feel like starting with these three was good because by total coincidence, within his oeuvre, there happened to be three sonatas in the key of B flat at three very different stages of his compositional life. So obviously Mozart didn't live very long, but you could say that the first of these sonatas is early period. The second is sort of firmly in Vienna. And the third is closer to the end of his compositional life. He might not have known it yet. And the fact that they happen to all be in the same key, I think, makes for a wonderful kind of blank canvas through which we can see even more clearly how he developed in his writing through this time.
I'm curious, what sets them apart from one another? And then what are the similarities between them too?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd love to hear people's thoughts and feedback on this too. I think one of the similarities, there is something to the way he treats the key of B flat. There's a certain elegance. And a formality to how he approaches certain aspects of it. There's a certain very lyrical way that he approaches the second movements of these sonatas and the way that they're connected to each other through key, but also through texture. He does something similar in terms of character in the third movements of all these sonatas in the way that he treats those rondos. You know, within the 18 sonatas, I would say there are a few that are very specific emotional affects. Not one of these is one of those. They all kind of fit into a much more generalized idea. And yet he's toying and playing around with all sorts of things, like he's doing genre crossing. You know, there's a couple of places in two of the sonatas where he's asking you to play things that would be improvisatory, like Eingänge, or there's even a written out cadenza as if we were in a piano concerto in the middle of these sonatas. So he's crossing those forms in all of them. And just generally, there's a certain feeling, I think, that he had being on the flat side of the keys and not too far off. For Mozart, there's a kind of poise that comes with this key that runs through all of them.
What would you encourage us to listen for in each of these sonatas? I mean, I think what I'm getting at is there a section that you'd really like us to zoom in on each one of these? And then can you tell us where it is and describe it for us?
Sure. There's a couple of those. So in the first of these sonatas, I think, first of all, the very opening of it. He's got that single B flat and he's just sort of spinning out of that note. This was a time in his life when he was just leaving Salzburg for the first time, getting to know some new pianos or new keyboard instruments of the time. You know, Salzburg was a very small town. He only had access to a few things. And in those days, the keyboard instrument, the pianoforte or whatever you had in a town was totally different everywhere. There was no standardization. And sometimes they even had more keys or fewer keys or different pedals, pedals that would accomplish different things, completely different ways of making sound. And here he was finally, for the first time in his life, really getting to play around with that. And I feel like he's referencing an older style even than himself, which maybe is part of that old-fashioned Salzburg upbringing, but at the same time pushing the boundaries. So this is right off the opening of that K-281 sonata. Another spot in that sonata that I just love is the second movement, which is the Andante Amoroso. And there, Mozart does something already so early in his career that he would do forever, which is turn whatever he happens to be writing into an operatic scene. You know, Mozart looks at everything through the lens of the theater. In this case, this loving Andante has lines that go in thirds throughout. You know, they seem to be singing a duet. You could almost see what's happening on the stage. There's like a boat or a gondolier or, who knows. And this dialogue between them, this very intimate scene that is very operatic in the way that he's thinking about it. There's a nice backstory, too, which is that he had recently met the sister of the woman who would eventually become his wife. And he was quite taken with her and perhaps wrote this as a little bit of a love song to her at that time, you know, smitten at the not quite age of 20, that it has that level of passion to it. So those are two things to watch out for in that sonata. In the middle of these B-flat sonatas, to me, it starts out with one of the most beautiful flowing melodies, I think, in all of Mozart. It begins on an upbeat and keeps going after that. The way that the right hand sings, to me, is so beguiling. It's like before the piece has even taken off, you're already deeply in. You can't help but be in that world just because of the incredible flow of the melody that he's put in. That's something I would definitely listen for. The last movement of that sonata is a concerto movement. It's the craziest thing, but he puts a rondo, as if it were a rondo for a concerto, in a solo piano sonata. And there's a spot in there where there's an actual cadenza. And it has all of the traditional things you would find in the cadenza of a concerto. You know, the chords that lead up to the cadenza that we all know that, oh, now the orchestra's played these big chords, it's time for the soloist to come out. Heck is the soloist, you know, it's all the pianist. It has the free-formed stuff, although he's written it all out. There's even the trill. So I find that that thinking, that kind of boundary crossing, really interesting in Mozart.
Would he have been the soloist originally in these performances? Is that, do you think that maybe changes that perspective a little bit?
I think that's, you know, that's a terrific question, and it's a really important one for me personally, actually, when I think about interpreting these pieces. I think, yes, he would have been the soloist in 90% of anything that he wrote for piano. But interestingly, his students would have been soloists in the other 10%. So even when he wasn't the pianist, he was writing for a very specific pianist in mind. The other thing about these sonatas is, unlike the concerti, which would have been premiered in public with enormous, the big concerts at Lent when everybody comes, all of the city of Vienna turns out to hear Mozart's latest, these would have maybe been performed for, you know, 10 people in somebody's salon, maybe just between, within the piano studio. You know, maybe whatever it is, it's a very, very, very much less of a public premiere. That's also an interesting question in terms of what it was that Mozart was thinking. I also think it's fascinating. In some of these sonatas, I feel like you can hear Mozart inviting his own students to decorate, to ornament, to improvise. And sometimes he will write it out for you, and sometimes it's not written out quite as much. And I think that's his way of trying to teach. You know, at the time, for a pianist performing, for any musician performing, you had to know how to improvise live. You had to know how to just put those in and make them sound right, which we think of now as the realm only of jazz. But that was part of his education to his students, was, look, here's how you do it. And one of my favorite things is there's certain sonatas where he writes these out with such meticulous detail that I'm thinking, oh, this student was probably not that advanced. You know, and he's trying to show the student who's going to perform that one, here's how you do the improvisation so that they follow a logical thread.
Interesting. One of the things I heard you say is you made reference to Mozart creating a singing line. And you've said that in many ways, Mozart has taught the keyboard to sing. Can you tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, in music that came before it, for in the Baroque, other instruments frequently imitate vocal lines. If you think of, you know, oboes or violins in Bach's music or in Baroque Italian music, often, particularly in slow movements, they'll have lines that could easily be sung by the human voice, or at least you could easily imagine sung by the human voice. Keyboards didn't do that so much. Partly it was that the harpsichord did not lend itself. It didn't feel like a natural outgrowth of human vocal singing. And partly it was just the nature of the writing. You know, the keyboard often had to play the orchestra and just cover a lot of ground and not necessarily take that very personal role. And I think Mozart, certainly Haydn as well, but Mozart was a big part of teaching the keyboard how to sing as well, how to connect those lines. So you have, particularly in the slow movements, but as I said, even in the very opening of this middle B-flat sonata in the first movement, you have Mozart giving the instrument lines that you would hum on your way out, lines that you would really be physically embodying or feeling like you want to embody. I think that was an important development in the writing for the keyboard. And of course, it makes perfect sense that this is happening right at the same time that the keyboard itself is beginning to develop and the quality of what you can actually do with a keyboard is beginning to change.
In a letter to his father, Mozart said, "It is much easier to play quickly than it is to play slowly, which means the slow passages are much more challenging. It is in those slow movements where we get to hear the really rich expression of emotions." Can you talk a little bit about how you approach the slow movements in these sonatas?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've really touched on the key thing, which is I very much approach it from a vocal perspective. I do think that anytime any piece of music that Mozart wrote, anytime he approached a work, it was from the perspective of theater. You know, he was so comfortable. He went to his family, you know, when he was a kid, they would go to the theater every night. He was so comfortable thinking of things from the point of view of people on stage. And when he comes to these slow movements, he's always thinking about, what if it were a singer singing this line? What if it came from somebody, even though I'm writing it for the piano, what if it had that side to it? So I think that's really, for me, that's the connection, that he's writing it on the piano because that's the instrument he's writing for, but he's not thinking of it from the piano.
In his scores, one thing that makes Mozart's music special is his willingness to let the performer capture the mood in the music. And I'm wondering if you can share an example or two where you went all out to capture the mood of the music.
Yeah, the last movement of the third one of these B-flats, I think is a very lighthearted, it's sort of Mozart at his good mood best. And there's something about being in character for that one that I felt like I always needed to, you can't just play it like it's straight, nice music. You have to sort of feel there would have been a little alcohol involved, is all I'm saying, before that movement starts.
I'm wondering what you have learned about yourself during this pandemic that maybe has surprised you.
I've learned so much about myself. I don't know about you, but I'm not the same person, I think. Well, maybe I'm the same person, but I'm not aware of the same qualities. I think I've maybe solidified for myself something which I thought I knew, which is that music is pretty much all I need. I like all sorts of other things. Certainly I miss contact with people as we all do, but the music itself is what's important to me. What I miss more than anything else during this time is chamber music with other people. You know, if you were to give me a choice right now of go and make some chamber music or you get to have dinner with friends, I would choose the chamber music. And I found the few opportunities that I've had to do that with other people during this time were such a human, deep human connection, for me even way more meaningful than just getting to talk with somebody in person.
During the challenging times in which we're currently living on many levels, what can Mozart's music, in particular, these sonatas, offer the listener?
For me, Mozart offers transcendence. He shows us where our human emotions lie and where they can go, and he elevates them. He takes whatever they are and makes them more meaningful, more beautiful, more desirable. Even negative emotions, I think, that these three sonatas happen not to have too many of those. But even when he tackles those. He makes us feel how valuable those emotions really are for us. I don't know anybody else who does that in quite the same way. It's very spiritual in the way that he's doing it. Interesting for a guy who was, at least in word, not that spiritual, but his music certainly is.
The first in a 5-volume series celebrating the music of Mozart with pianist Orly Shaham. If you're enjoying New Classical Tracks, the best thing that you can do for the show is to tell somebody else about it, help spread the word, and take a moment to rate and review us on your podcasting app. Thanks to our producer, Valerie Kaler, with technical assistance from Michael Osborne. I'm Julie Amacher. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media.